Welcome back to System Ministervia, the podcast where I am absolutely sleep-deprived. This is Brent.
I don't have my goddamn gallbladder anymore.
And I'm Peyton.
And Jason does indeed no longer have his gallbladder.
They told me. I haven't looked.
He's alive. I feel like he wouldn't. Well, no, because, like, you're a little bit more achy now.
How does it feel
well,
to be...
Well, achy on the outside, but I can... I don't think that's how that works. I can say that, like, literally from the day I had surgery on, I went back to eating more or less normally, and...
Well, that's good.
Minor things have set me back there, but definitely feel better.
Yeah, you gotta ease back into it. Your body can't process fats the way it used to.
Sort of eased into it. I gave myself, like, 2 days of vegetables, and then I just ate a fucking hamburger.
See, were you, like... New body who dis after you ate the vegetables? No?
No. No. I'm not gonna talk about the vegetables.
Not in
a public forum.
What did you have?
The vegetables were like Soylent round two, is what you're saying.
They were just like honestly, like, I know they're not fat, but it just seems like my body
They
was
went
just
out
like,
the
eh.
way they went in.
Yeah, we're like, we're not digesting these. You can just deal with this. It was weird. So now everyone knows that.
Oh, look, I mean, you can't help it, you know, like you're
just like
your
entire pea pods.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible. Could have worse, could have been Tide Pods.
You're right. Now that, Tide Pods are the silent killer of 2018.
The silent killer.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're having a good time eating some fucking Tide Pods while you're at the movies. You go home, you fucking go to sleep, never wake up.
By the way, if you're part of Generation Z, don't eat Tide Pods. Seriously.
If you're part of any generation, just don't eat Tide Pods.
Yeah, that too. That too.
Okay.
So we got some good stuff. We have how to choose an enterprise distro, as in like a Linux distro, but I guess you can apply the same rules to the three main BSDs if you need to pick between them. How to be a good mentor. We've got some awesome news about Let's Encrypt that we'll be talking about in depth. And we've got a rant. Now, it's not the rant that we promised to do last episode.
But it'll be good.
We've actually pushed that to next episode after this. Jathan found something else that he wanted to rant about.
You wanted to rant about it.
I inadvertently started ranting about it.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. That is a bit disingenuous of me. Not intentionally, but it's disingenuous of me. Jathan found a topic.
I literally just posted a link.
He wanted to discuss.
And all of a sudden, there was like a fucking explosion through the fucking internet.
And I flipped
and
my
Brontosaurus lid. And Brontosaurus here was just fucking mad.
I flipped my lid, yes. So really, it was me that that got fired up about it. So
the only thing I get fired up about is global warming.
That's the only thing you ever get fired up about?
I've never even been mad before.
You're
I don't know
what
that is.
You're a fucking lying
what?
Piece of shit.
I'm going to have to go ahead and call bullshit on that right now. I think we just go back to the previous episode to indicate Jathan being mad about something.
I feel like if someone picked any episode at random, they would have like
90% chance.
Maybe not 90, but I would say like 1 in 3 chance that you're angry irrationally about something.
All the time.
Okay, when I do get angry, it's always reasonable and rational.
No.
Last night I was angry, and there was a good reason.
What were you angry about last night?
Linode's DNS.
What about Linode's DNS?
It was slow. It was taking for fucking ever. To update.
Did you make sure that you selected like the right time to live on your changes?
Yes.
Are you sure?
No, he did, because it was showing up on the resolvers I was using.
Oh, okay.
But not Linode's own resolvers.
Right.
Because that makes so much more fucking sense.
Okay, all right.
Well,
listen, I really like Linode, which is why I am now spending more money with them to make my dreams come true, but... I was mad. I was fucking mad.
Dreams come true.
Yeah, my dreams of being a better person.
Yeah, before...
Saving the internet.
Before we kick this off properly by talking about what we've been drinking.
Yes.
Or what we are drinking. Would you like to talk very briefly about what you've been doing with your Linodes?
All right. Well, I have been using Linode for many years at this point. And every time, you know, my Linode got kind of stuffy or whatever, I would just, you know... resize it to a larger Linode and keep adding services and call it a day. And that's always been fine and fairly manageable and whatever. But, you know, professionally speaking, I know that it's probably better to segregate services and, you know, for security reasons, not having everything running in one place and for failover and fault tolerance and blah, 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 blah. You name the reasons. There's plenty of them. So I finally broke down my 4 gig Linode into 4 smaller Linodes and, you know, made sure they were all networked appropriately the way I like and set up. And so I now have a separate web host. I have a mail server. I have one Linode that is literally just running OpenVPN. And then I have a sort of management node for miscellaneous services and, you know, fucking around and stuff.
Nice.
You're miscellaneous. It's a little bit more than management. It's a miscellaneous node.
I use it for IRC.
It's not really management unless you're running a botnet.
I don't know. I tell you what to do there. Seems like management.
Whether I actually listen to you or not, though, is not.
Well, you're a shitty fucking person, but that's not my fault.
Excuse you,
dude.
Okay, but I have to say, so I had actually. You know, there's a lot of sort of quintessential sysadmin tasks, and I've done a lot of them. You know, I've configured all kinds of crazy backups and stuff like that. I've done all kinds of work with RAID, virtualization, whatever. But I had never done email before, and two things. One, I never realized, honest to God, how many fucking moving parts were there. Mm-hmm. But there's quite a lot of services required just to run fucking email.
A lot.
Modern email, I should say.
Yeah. And number two, I am pretty proud of myself, actually. I followed several different shitty pieces of documentation and more or less started all my services in the first time, and they were just, like, more or less working with a few hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty cool.
I noticed that you mentioned reading shitty how-tos instead of reading the RFCs like I told you to.
Mm-hmm.
I read the RFCs.
You did?
But not, like, super in-depth, but I printed them out while I was at work and put them on my desk. And
that's kind of like reading them.
No. I did read them. Like, the day before I had surgery, I was trying not to really jump into anything new at work. So I kind of just sat there going through those and underlining shit and whatever.
Mm.
I definitely feel like I have a better understanding of email as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it wasn't like they were like, this is how you set up PostFix, so...
Well, yeah, inevitably, they're RFCs. They're not going to tell you how to do that.
Right, exactly. So, you know, the RFCs are helpful for understanding the concepts. But beyond that, you still obviously need documentation to install the services you're trying to run.
Right. Right.
And most of the documentation for that was quite horrible, in my opinion, which is never wrong.
Yeah, because that's what an opinion is, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Can we take a moment here to...
PostFix...
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, PostFix upstream docs are... They leave a little bit to be desired, and I will grant him that. What were you saying?
Just, you know, rest in peace to Stephen Hawking, the good doctor.
Oh, yeah. Rest in peace. That'll be one less... Nope, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, you dickhead.
I'm not going to say it because that's going to get me in trouble.
Somebody might be mad at you. I don't know who, but...
Well, alright, no, I'll just...
No,
I'll,
no, no I'll mention we've it. Done this before.
We have. Like, I hate when, like, people talk about stuff outside of their field. Like, Hawking is not a computer scientist, so he should have never, ever been talking about AI from a... mouthpiece sort of perspective.
Sure.
He's still a very intelligent individual.
That doesn't give him credence into AI and how it works.
Oh, I wasn't talking about his I just wanted to remember the guy. I mean, he was a smart dude and he really opened up science.
I was going to be a smart aleck and be like, that'd be one less guy talking about stuff he doesn't know about, but
hey, you got it out.
What a dick.
But, you know, like at the same time, like he's done some crazy stuff for physics. Uh-huh. So like I definitely recognize he was a bright guy. Bright guy, and, you know, rest in peace. Requiem in Pace? Is that?
I think so. That's
Requiem in Pax.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Okay, well, let's just...
we'll just say rest in peace.
What the fuck are you drinking?
Okay, yeah, what are we drinking? I'm back on that Jefferson's Reserve. I mean, you guys know how I do. I start a bourbon and then I like sticking with it. I don't like hopping
around. Boring motherfucker. If you drank more, you could just open all the bottles at once and finish them at the same time.
Yeah, if I drank more, I'd also be an alcoholic, Jathan.
You're not already?
No, I drink more and I'm not an alcoholic.
No, I'm not actually.
That's good.
Yeah, but I don't have like... You've got like, what, like you're 8 years younger than me, something like that? Almost 10 years younger than me.
Sure.
Your body can take it.
That's true. It really is.
You lose that real quick. Like, once you hit, like, late 20s, early 30s, your body's just like, fuck you. No. I'm done.
I'm not gonna experience that.
Yeah. What, you won't?
No.
Well, we'll see. We'll have to wait a couple years to find out, though.
Yeah.
So join us in season 7 of...
Yeah. Let's see how that goes.
Right?
All right.
We better have 100K subscribers by then.
We don't already?
Well, I would have no way of knowing.
You're right.
Because it's RSS and XML. All right, what are you guys drinking?
Absolute Vodka. It's probably about a quarter or an eighth left. Yeah, about an eighth left. So that'll be a...
Just vodka.
Just vodka, yep. It's a vodka night, what can I say?
Vodka night.
Labatt's with vodka. Anyway, I am drinking Akintoshin 12. It is a...
Gesundheit.
Yeah, a lowland scotch. A lot of lowland scotch has a very small amount of peat in it, so it's kind of smoky. They don't use any peat, so it's really sort of floral and light. If you haven't tried it and you don't like really smoky scotch, but you like other scotch, you know, it's like $40 for a bottle. So give it a try, maybe, or find it at a bar, whatever. I like it. Yeah.
That's local to you?
No, it's scotch. It's from Scotland.
Oh, right. Sorry. Okay, listeners, I apologize. My brain's not going to be working quite right for a little bit. I just woke up from a nap like 10 minutes before we hopped into pre-show, so I'm still like really foggy.
That being said, if you're hiring for like an HPC manager or something and you're somewhere in Europe, let me know.
What?
Or Canada, because I'd consider that move.
Oh. Why would you do that? Why would you do that?
Well, moving's on his mind. He needs to find a place with a walk-in closet. And
yeah, what if the internet doesn't work wherever I go and we can't do this anymore?
That sucks.
Where would you go where you would Canada. Get a sysadmin job? Oh, yeah. They've shitty bandwidth.
Which I know I said Europe, but honestly, like, I would probably move to British Columbia too, so.
You could move to Singapore.
I know people who live in BC, or in that area, at least around there, and they don't have problems with their internet.
How hard are they trying?
Well, they're probably not you, so.
Yeah, no,
not hard enough.
I can say that with direct experience in, you know, high-tech carriers in Canada. Yeah, the infrastructure just isn't there yet. It's lagging behind like 10 years, so it tends to be very slow.
Yeah, you can get some really cheap, so you start... servers that are in Canada, and depending what you need them for, you know, might be the right thing for you. Most of them are like ARM servers or Atom, but they're cheap as shit.
What?
Well, that's probably why they're called So You Start. We need to get a start on this. We are almost 15 minutes in.
It's all right. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. We're doing great. Have a good conversation.
We have a lot of stuff to talk
we
about.
We do. We really do.
Yeah. This is going to be a very long episode, I feel like.
Yeah.
But now that I've said that, it's probably going to be a short episode, so we'll see.
You always do that.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Well, no, I don't think I've ever predicted a long episode and have it be short. I've frequently said it's going to be a short one, and then it becomes long.
Yeah.
But
that's,
we'll see.
Uh-huh.
We'll see. Yeah.
All right, are we ready for news?
Mm-hmm.
All right, take it away. Let's go.
All right.
Let's kill it.
Hey, this is Pain with the News. I'm not going to do the sound because it's annoying and I hate it. All right, so we have a lot of news tonight. Thankfully, nothing too crazy. Oh, well, maybe there is. We'll see. The first thing we have is that Samba has two vulnerabilities currently in it right now. It has more, of course, but it has these two as well. The first one could allow unprivileged remote attackers to launch a DDoS against servers, which uses the RPC spools service if it's configured to run as external daemon. So this can cause the print spool to crash. You might want to make sure that you check your sanitization checks for the input parameters to the spool's RPC call. That's the CVE-2018-1050, the CVE-2018-1057, which allows unprivileged authenticated users to change any password over LDAP, including admin passwords.
So make sure you patch that, Jathan, because I know you're using Samba and LDAP.
But I am not meeting the external RPC
this is different.
Conditions.
No,
that's for the DOS attack. The DOS
you're talking about the second thing.
Yeah, we're talking about the second
now,
thing.
Now, there are other flaws that exist similar to this already in Samba, but this one works when using the Samba Active Directory DC, which doesn't properly validate. So, yeah. Work on that a little bit, guys, and get back to us. Let us know, you know. The next thing we have, this is an interesting one. Rich actually pointed this out to me the other day. Forge, there's a website called amdflaws.com. They are purporting that there are 13 critical vulnerabilities and manufacturer backdoors in AMD processors. There are currently four classes of vulnerabilities. There's Rise and Fall, which allows malicious code to take complete control of the AMD secure processor. There's Fallout, which has vulnerabilities that allow attackers to read from and write to protected memory areas, such as SMRAM and Windows Credential Guard isolated memory. There's Chimera, which is two sets of manufacturer backdoors discovered. One is implemented in firmware, the other one is in hardware ASIC. It links the CPU to USB, SATA, and PCIe devices. This is, Master Key is the fourth one. It's multiple vulnerabilities in the AMD secure processor firmware. It allows attackers to infiltrate the secure processor. Now, the thing I would like to point out is that this is possibly like an assassination attempt on AMD by Viceroy Research and CTS Labs. The reason why this is all coming out is that CTS Labs created the website amdflaws.com, and then Viceroy Research did a very interesting report, is what I will say, on the CTS Labs security allegations.
I don't think anybody's at this point, the last I saw, before I went in for a nap, which was like 3 hours ago, the last I saw, nobody was actually doubting anymore the validity of the bugs.
No. At but this point, AMD, I read an article that said AMD was pretty seriously looking at them and trying to come up with a plan of attack.
Yeah. So, I mean, so the flaws are real. Now, you know, people are saying, like, it's no Spectre, it's no Meltdown. I get that.
It's pretty bad.
But it doesn't make them any less serious because a lot of the Intel SME stuff that we've talked about is very similar to these bugs or these flaws.
Supposedly, the flaws or backdoors or both were put in place by AS Media, which is a subsidiary of Asus Tech, which is a Taiwanese company. Yeah, so if you run AMD, you're not any safer than an Intel processor.
Well, marginally. I would say still maybe marginally, but like the management engine stuff is still.
You're not as free and clear as you thought you were, is what I'll say.
Yeah. Yes.
The next bit of news we have is that there are some VPN bugs, I guess we could call them, or vulnerabilities. There are three popular VPN services named in this: Hotspot Shield, ZenMate, and PureVPN. I originally thought that we had talked about something related to PureVPN recently, but it was actually MySafeVPN. So Hotspot Shield is the big one named in this article. And it has three separate bugs.
Which we have talked about.
Yes, we have talked about that one, there are three separate bugs in the company's Chrome extension, which handles the proxy autoconfig scripts. They are, essentially what the bugs are doing is they're leaking real IP addresses, which is, Brent, this is a bad thing, right?
I mean, if you're fucking trying to be anonymous, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. I would classify that as pretty bad,
Anchor Free has fixed the bugs, who makes HubSpot Shield has fixed the bugs and noted that its mobile and desktop apps were not affected. The article writers or researchers reached out to ZenMate and PureVPN. PureVPN said that they had fixed the bugs a week earlier. I don't see anything from ZenMate. They didn't respond. So, try to watch who you're using for your VPN services.
As always, I'm going to take the moment now to do a quick plug for my employer.
Yeah. Who's that again?
Of course, being totally transparent for it, I work them. I love the company. But Foxy Proxy also has VPNs. So if you are looking to replace perhaps Hotspot Shield, head over to getfoxyproxy.org because that's the company I work for. I know I put a lot of time and effort into making sure it's a good network. So,
So the next thing we have is that, there's a hacking group called App15, which is linked with Chinese intelligence, and they reportedly penetrated a UK government contractor and stole military tech. This company called NCC Group was brought in. They were brought in last May to investigate. They found that the hacking group App15 used backdoors such as Royal CLI and Royal DNS, and then also their signature BS2005. This is a really kind of a cool article. Actually, they talk about what they did. The tools that the command and control servers were posted on were apparently hosted on a Linode or a Google server of some sort. They found this out based on IP and domain analysis. They used a Windows run key to create batch scripts which then allowed it to avoid the behavioral detection. They were ejected. They were discovered and ejected, but they didn't give up. They regained access via the corporate virtual private network using a stolen certificate that they had extracted from a compromised host. So, you know, it doesn't end once you kick the guys out. If they found a way in once, they can find a way in another time. So make sure you're keeping an eye on that, guys. Okay, and let's see. The next bit of news we have here is that Cisco has a vulnerability in the Cisco Prime Collaboration Provisioning Software, or PCP software, which could allow unauthenticated local attackers to log in to the underlying Linux system. Once again, if someone has local access to your system, it's not as secure as you think it is. The vulnerability uses a hard-coded password on the system. Their updates have been released for it. There are no workarounds to address that vulnerability. The website, Cisco website, rates it as a 5.9 or a medium. However, extenuating circumstances could allow an attacker to elevate to root. And Lovely. They do have a list of vulnerable products on the website that we will link to you. And Holy our shit. Last bit of news that we have here is we talk about DDoSes quite a bit, how to handle them, how not to handle them. But I think you're going to like this one. GitHub suffered a DDoS. It was 1.35 terabits per second. Mm-hmm. It's fucking amazing to me that they could withstand that much.
That is now the new record, or new world record.
Recorded record.
But like, I feel like we would know if there was a higher one, you know?
So they used their DDoS mitigation service, Akamai Prolexic. The last big DDoS. Last big DDoS was actually in 2016 against DYN Den, which peaked at a whopping 1.2 terabits per second. The Akamai used a number of things to defend from the attack, including recently implemented mitigations from Memcached servers. So Memcached is, of course, known as an amplification attack. They essentially blocked Memcached packets, denying them to come in. The last time GitHub was attacked was in 2015 for 6 days by possible Chinese-sponsored attackers, hackers.
I remember that.
The DDoS was monitored by ThousandEyes, and they said it was concluded in about 25 to 30 minutes. So they actually did, from what I read here, they actually did a fantastic job of trying to troubleshoot the issue, calling their DDoS mitigation, and then letting the DDoS mitigation just take over. Like, they actually let their DDoS mitigation do all the work for them. Like, it was amazing. I'm impressed by this article,
They definitely learned their lesson from that, like, 6 day out. Yeah. I think the actual, like, the attack lasted maybe 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But, like, the actual outage was only for about 10 minutes. Like, it was like 9-point-something minutes from recollection.
After 8 minutes.
Which is astounding for a DDoS that
size. Well, in 10 minutes, they automatically called for help from Akamai. The Akamai took over, and after 8 minutes, the attacker stopped. So they have a nice little graphic here, actually, on here. At 1725, they're normal. Like, 1727 or 28, it's this massive spike straight up, almost. It's like an 85-degree line going straight up. And then it just has this lovely, lovely peak, and then this gradual drop down, still about a 75 or 60-degree arc. It's seriously amazing. So check this article out, guys. It's really, really awesome. They did a great job. I am impressed by GitHub every time. You know, they have their database get cracked, and then they have this, and they handle it with aplomb, you know?
Yeah, and we do have, you know, we trash on them when we can. But, like, a lot of that's just my personal bias against centralized, you know, source code repositories. I'm totally cool if people mirror to them, but I don't think they should be your authoritative source for code.
I think it depends what you're doing.
Maybe. But yeah, like, all that aside, they handled it with a lot of grace. And
I think that's the most important thing, is that they were able to...
Yeah, they handled it really well. I am impressed. So for me to say that about GitHub is...
of the things that, especially, you know, guys in our field, we're it, you know? We go in somewhere and we work and we're it. We handle email and tickets and, you know, crash servers. And for a company to say, we can't handle this, but we have a company who can... and then shift it over to them, I think that speaks volumes to, you know, this idea that it's not just a one-man show everywhere you go, you know, and it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. It really shouldn't be, you know.
Yeah.
But super proud of them, you know. Yeah.
And that's been news.
That has been with the news.
Wait, I have a question.
No.
Yes.
I've never heard of a fucking DDoS mitigation, like, company or service.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that a real thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So what they'll do, typically, you know, if they do it right, and, you know, I'm not in the business, and I haven't even racked for a long time, so I haven't had to directly deal with it in a very long time. But back when I was a rack monkey, the way we would typically deal with it, I mean, I never had to, but, like, when we would mitigate it, you have things like hardware firewalls who do inspection, and they say, like, okay, there's a lot of these types of packets coming from a bunch of different IPs. So it totally ignores the IPs and instead dynamically implements blocking for the type of behavior it's based on. These appliances cost a very large amount of money because they try to be intelligent.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you get a firewall that instead of like a hard policy or rule-based filtering system, where it's like, okay, are you trying to reach port X at host Y? If yes, go ahead. If not, you know, fuck off. You instead have something like, okay, are you sending X amount of bytes to this port or this port range? And you know, is it encrypted? Is it like, you know, raw characters? Stuff like that. Like, they'll do a sampled packet inspection, basically. You don't want to do packet inspection on the whole thing, because that'll fuck you over. But then typically, the way you actually firewall off that sort of thing is you would rather null route it rather than just drop the packets, because it tends to discourage continuation of the attack.
Well, it's like responding to an email that's a spam, or, you know, clicking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't want to reply to it, because then they'll know it's an active.
So
yeah.
So by disabling the port or whatever, then it says, oh, it's not there, then.
Plus, you can make the problem worse, especially if it's a DDoS, by sending a reject packets instead of just dropping them. Because then you clog up your outbound even more, especially in cases like this where it's like a reflection type of a thing. Yeah. If you're one of the intermediary things, like if you're the one that was running an open memcache, shame on you. But if you were, you would not only have to then be sending out tons of these reflected packets, but you would also be sending reject packets, hypothetically, once you switched over. And that's still the same problem. You're still sending out a ton of packets for something you really shouldn't be sending out traffic for at all. Whew. Are you guys ready to get into the topics?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's
get it on.
Yeah, this is going to be a long episode.
Get it on.
All right, so how to choose an enterprise distro. I didn't even bother looking at that link we have in the source, in the scratch pad.
I'm looking at it.
Because...
Go ahead.
Because I can tell you right now, your two choices are Debian or CentOS based. Or, well...
No, obviously not based on the goddamn article.
Calm down. Brunt. Calm down. Okay, I would say Debian or...
There he goes, getting mad again.
Red Hat.
I am mad. I'm always fucking mad.
I would say Debian or Red Hat based, because then that includes Ubuntu and CentOS. I would not say Clear Linux is on that list.
Well,
which is what the article specifically supposes.
Apparently, it's the fastest.
Yeah.
So but here's the thing.
Sorry, not fast.
That doesn't mean it's
going to
have...
Most powerful. What does that even mean?
Yeah, so here's the thing. Is this was at some point... I'm trying to find now if it still is, but I'm pretty sure that this is Intel-backed.
Oh, Clear Linux?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is. Or it was. So here I'm linking to you in IRC right now. Well, you laugh, but hold on. So I'm linking to you right now in our IRC channel.
The slash dot... I finally clicked on the fucking article. It says, recently completed Linux distro benchmarks by Pharonix show Intel's Clear uh-huh. Linux.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. Okay.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, no. It did a six-way enterprise-focused Linux distro comparison, and it says that Linux is the fastest with a Core i9 and Xeon systems, easily beating CentOS, OpenSUSE, and Ubuntu.
So here's what I want to say about this. So
yes.
Obviously, I work in, you know, an environment where performance is actually fairly important,
mm-hmm.
and our cluster does run Intel hardware, mm-hmm. you know, the processors anyway. So we had seriously talked about demoing this just to see what it would do on some older hardware in terms of like, hey, could we get another year out of this because we're using this OS? Which, you know, I personally haven't actually tried it. That didn't ever come to fruition. A lot of things and stuff and whatever.
Right.
But, you know, what is the actual performance boost? And I would agree with you, for most enterprise environments, I think, and we've talked about this extensively in the past, I'm pretty sure we actually have a whole topic that was choosing an enterprise distro before.
I don't recall it, which is why I put it on the list.
Okay, well...
Or why I moved it over from suggested topics. Yeah.
Right. So, in any case...
What we did talk about was distros you would want for high-performance computing.
Okay. Well, apparently this should have been on the list.
Well, no. Only if you have a Core i9. Oh, okay. I do have a Core i9, by the way, in my desktop.
You do now, yeah.
Yeah.
Humble yeah. brag.
Maybe a little
how
bit.
Is, but... How is it? Do you like it? Would you? But let me ask you this. Would you buy it again?
Honestly, no.
Okay.
Because, like, the clock speed is lower than my i7 was. And my i7 was, like, 3 years old. Now, yeah, normally, like, clock speed is some, like, you know, I rigged it out so I can overclock if I need to. I have a water cooling system set up and everything. Which, by the way, have gotten way better.
You yeah, get, like, you've got the all-in-one, though, right?
Yeah, I've got an all-in-one, exactly. Because I don't want to worry about having to keep it topped off. I don't want to have to worry about it leaking.
Yeah, right.
We got super off topic, by the way.
We did. We did.
Like, I was in the middle of being a person.
We did.
And now I'm not a person.
You're bringing it back. You're still a person. Yeah, I won't
I'm running out of
you,
scotch, I mean, goddammit.
As much as we want to say that you are or aren't a person, you are definitely still a person.
I don't think us getting off topic changes that. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's a good point. Let's get back on topic. As far as like the criteria, I think would be a much better direction to take this. Like, what criteria do you need to actually be a good enterprise distro, right? You need to have stability. You need to have point releases. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as I love Arch and its rolling release,
it's not ideal for like,
release.
Yeah. Okay, so this is what I was getting at before you fuckers took away my personhood.
Okay, go. What?
But I mean, that's what I was going to say is in an enterprise environment, you know, if you're running a VM server or you're running VMs that are meant to host production websites or whatever, regardless of what the hypervisor is, I don't think CLearOS is a great choice, especially, you know, at that point, you're already taking a performance hit because virtual machine, et cetera, whatever, who gives a fuck. But I really do think that this operating system was designed for performance more than like being the most stable or best idea or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, me personally, like, you know, my current big compute cluster will be phased out in about 18 months or so. And so, you know, I am constantly thinking about what's next. Are we going to migrate to, you know, keeping a smaller on-prem footprint and, you know, bursting out into the cloud? Or what are we going to do to accommodate the use case of my researchers? And, you know, I don't have a great idea of what that looks like yet because there's a lot of things that go into it, including funding and who's applying for said funding and all these other things, because I can't personally do that, right? I don't have a PhD. I can't really apply for grants. Mm-hmm. So the best I can do is try to encourage my researchers to do that for, like, not for me, but, you know, convince them that it's the right direction to head. Or not convince them, but, you know, obviously if I'm telling them to do that, I think it's actually the best idea.
So basically, hey, I want to play with this hardware, get a grant so we can get it?
No. I mean, if I were going to try in the next 18 months to get a whole new compute cluster, I would basically identify who my biggest users are right now. I would spec out the hardware that I think caters to them more than everybody else. And I would approach them and say, you know, our current cluster is going to see the end of its life. I think you should apply for these grants, and I might present them with two or three. I think you should ask for this hardware and cite these reasons. Here's the usage statistics of what you've done over the last, you know, 3 years with our current cluster. And I would have to basically rely on them to write that grant for the institution. And that's really not my, I mean, I keep saying me, but really, you know, the IT director takes care of all that shit. It's not
so
really me.
I'm looking through this article, looking at the benchmarks, and apparently Clear Linux is just absolutely fucking amazing because all their numbers are well ahead of every other distro in here.
Mm.
And of course I say that with all the sarcasm I can muster. This looks doctored to me, is what this looks like. Not doctored, I should say
skewed,
definitely.
Biased,
I'm looking at a compiled benchmark right now for IO performance, and CentOS is 256, so more is better. So 256 megabytes per second. Clear is doing 628.6 megabytes a second. You know, I
think it's
possible. The next highest from that, though, is Ubuntu 18. So, you know, right at 548. Yeah.
So here's the thing, though, is first of all, I think that's a stupid fucking benchmark because in most environments, I don't think most people are thinking about fucking compiling as like the most important thing that they do. And, you know, the honest truth is as well, not in every environment, but in a lot of environments, the limiting factor is not usually CPU anyway. It's fucking I.O.
The thing that I'm curious about is they've used the same hardware for all of these. Have they made sure that they have all of the requisite patches? I mean, are they using a fully patched CleanOS system and a Ubuntu 16 system that's, you know, hadn't seen patches for a couple days or a week or a month? I mean, I'd like to actually
Is it the same kernel version?
Exactly, you know.
Or even the same compiler.
Right. That's...
Which it doesn't specify that I
see. Mention in a lot
because Intel could be using the Intel compiler, which clearly has some advantages.
No. It's all even... Yeah. They're all the same. They're definitely not taking advantage of anything at all.
I mean, I don't want to be a grouchy, like, doubting Thomas or anything like that.
He's crunchy. You bite into him, you break your fucking teeth.
I said it with a G, grunchy. Yeah, I don't know what that would be, but I like it. I don't want to be that guy, but I can't help but wonder, you know, like, how... What was the sort of determining factor here between these comparisons? Like, obviously, they grabbed the newest version of each, which is fine and dandy.
I mean, they did run, beyond that first page, a lot of different tests. Like, one of them is them running John the Ripper.
Yeah, they did run a lot of tests, but I'm looking at the graphs, and all of the OSs have a slight trend upward from one to the next to the next. And then Clear is way the fuck over on the other end of the bar. And I just... That just screams to me that they are taking values that are too high. Like, they've taken the extreme value high end for Clear and the extreme low end for the other ones, you know?
Yeah, or like, they averaged out the other ones. Sure. And they, you know, it feels markety to me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I don't want to, but it's Phoronix too. Phoronix tested the speeds, and Phoronix has a really good reputation. They really try and provide reliable results. So I'm not too worried if the results are by Phoronix and corroborated by them and everything, but...
So there's a comment, actually, in the Slashdot article. It says, Linux distro produced by Intel, tuned by Intel for latest Intel hardware, works fastest of any distro on latest Intel hardware. Shocking!
Yeah, it's kind of like AIX, right? Like, there's a reason it's so on IBM power. Tuned. Because it's developed by IBM, exactly. You know, like when you're, that's kind of natural to expect. Like, what I want to know is, do you have to use specific hardware? Like, besides just the CPU, do they recommend a specific motherboard to work with this distro? Specific, like, SSDs, you know, like, do they have a recommended hardware profile?
Well, anyway, so God I don't know. Damn it, if I could know. Finish my
oh,
fucking
holy
thought.
Him, really?
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, all I never really got to say is for, you know, things like I was describing, web hosts and shit like that, I would always choose CentOS or Red Hat. But if I were truly building a new cluster and I thought that I could have some kind of advantage by using something like CleanOS, would I consider it? Yeah, probably. Is all I was really
going
to say. But that's because we aren't necessarily worried about having the most stable or whatever. We're worried about, you know, squeezing performance out of things.
Well, for an HPC, that's, I mean, that makes sense.
Right, which, but again, I'm pretty sure is what it was actually designed for.
Mm-hmm. You guys also, though, you run a multitude of different software on that cluster, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, like, with things like Red Hat and CentOS.
Well, that's my point, though, is if you keep scrolling through their tests, like, looking at the hidden Markov model test, Clear was actually the last one on the list. It was the worst. So I'm sure it'd be a gamble and would be completely, you know, dependent on your environment and your users.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would imagine it'd be great if you have a ton of money to throw at Intel and be like, look, can you come up with some patches that make this particular software that we run and only run work great on Clear Linux? I feel like that...
It gets better.
Yeah, I feel like that would be the ideal case for this.
It gets better. I'm sitting here looking at the CleanOS site, and the community edition that you could download is not for production use. You have to purchase...
Of course.
You have to purchase either the home or business edition for production use.
They have a home edition?
Home edition that's paid for.
But they have a home edition.
Yeah, that's what it says. CleanOS 7.3 home edition.
Well, why? If it's...
Listen. No. I don't know.
Nope. Not gonna ask. Not gonna ask. I'm not gonna waste the cycles on it.
And to be true, to be honest, it doesn't matter. If you are using ClearOS,
what do you mean?
And you have, I mean, whether they have a home edition or not, none of us are going out to buy it, but if you are using it or whatever, who the fuck cares? Like, I'm not here to tell anybody what to do.
But I feel like
maybe you're fucking,
it was a waste of
Bitcoin mining and ClearOS is advantageous.
No, I don't.
Maybe
know about
I'm
that.
Just saying.
I
like,
have
I
my doubts.
All right,
well, I put a link so we can at least, you know, link to them.
I think we're beating the dead horse at this point. We're only one. We're one out of four of our topics so far.
Let's move on to the next one.
And we're not moving any to the next episode. I already decided this. We're gonna make this a long episode if it needs to be.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. We're just gonna
moving
move
on.
So
moving
so
right
being
along.
Being a good mentor. This, unlike the Clear Linux bullshit, is actually something I do have experience with, and my Padawan is actually on this podcast.
Don't talk about
so
Peyton that.
No, you
also,
nuts. I've been.
You've
what?
Mentored me a little bit too.
Yeah, a little bit, but I'm not like your dedicated guru.
It's kind
I'm
of
not
just,
your guru. Capital
I'd
G
use
guru.
The word okay. It's not really
oh
good.
Excuse you. I feel like you wouldn't be. Hold on.
See, he's not that good. He walks
away.
No, I had to let the stupid cat out of the room because he keeps coming in and out. Listen. Listen.
Oh, man. Yeah, listen.
All right. I feel like I did a pretty dang good job because I don't know if you would be where you would be if I didn't mentor you all those years.
I don't.
For those,
have
for
like
those
a...
unfamiliar, I've been. Jathan's been my Padawan for like 9 years at least.
Yeah. I mean, we sort of. Right? Yeah. For a very long time, we were very in touch. And you were constantly helping me. But then you took a couple of years off when you moved to fucking New Orleans and shit.
Yeah, I kind of disappeared from
that. So we didn't actually start talking again, really, until I first started at BioFrontiers. And I pinged you on IRC and was like, hey, I'm a sysadmin now.
and
then you were like, fuck, I've always wanted to do this podcast. And I was like, oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Little did I know.
Yeah. Oh, you love it. But yeah, no, I can say from experience, we joke around about mentorships, at least in like the Linux world and the Unix world in general, I guess. You know, we call them like Padawans and Masters or Gurus and Apprentices and stuff like that. It's closer to the Sith than the Jedi. And I don't mean that just to be funny. I mean, like, there's one Master and one Apprentice. Like, you really need to have that one-to-one pairing, I think. Otherwise, like... It gets... I don't think I could give two people the same amount of mentorship that I gave Jathan.
All I know is that there were a lot of conversations that I came in on that were... I was concerned for Jathan's health. I'd see it and I'd be like...
Don't lie.
I'd be like, oh man, he's going to kill him this time.
Yeah.
I mean, we definitely, I think that's part of the relationship that makes it
work,
though.
It is. Like, we've known each other for years. So, like, he knows he can say and do some pretty dumb, stupid shit. He knows I'm going to rip his asshole. I'm going to rip him a new asshole for it.
Yeah, please don't rip my old asshole. Just rip me a new one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course, you know. Redundancy is better than... than expanding services.
If you can't have two gallbladders, you may as well have two buttholes to take care of the extra drainage.
Right. Exactly.
Man, you are weird.
Sure. But no, I mean, that's like, he knows I'm going to rip him a new one because he's doing some stupid shit. But at the end of the day, we both know, like, it's best to just, like, move on from there. Like, we both know it's going to happen. I know my blood pressure is going to go up from it, and he knows, like, he's going to get berated a little bit. And that's our dynamic. That I wouldn't say that's the right dynamic to take for every mentorship. But that's our dynamic, and we've had that dynamic for a very long time.
Yeah, and I think you've probably seen it on the show at some point.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially season
maybe
zero.
Maybe like one time.
When it was just the two of us, yeah. It definitely came out then. So, like, that's kind of why we all make fun of Jathan now, is because, like, he publicly has been exposed as in that sort of mentorship role. Sorry, only a little bit sorry about that. But, I mean, that's the thing. Like, when I berate Jathan, he knows it's because, like, I want him to be better. And to be fair, like don't laugh, you know it's true. And I'm really proud of where he's gotten. I mean, like... years ago, when I first started trying to help him with bullshit, it was... what would you say was the one thing that pissed me off the most back then?
Back then?
Yeah.
Like, when, then?
Like, the first maybe 2 or 3 years of mentoring you.
Honestly, I think that you were just so much more patient back then.
Yeah, because I knew you were new to it.
And also, I figured
you didn't know better.
And we were using Gentoo back then, too. So, like, honest to God, I don't know.
Requires a certain amount of Zen.
At some point, I figured you would have just been like, just uninstall it and use something else. I don't know. I can't really think of a project that just completely had you fucking raging at me, per se.
I didn't. That's true. I didn't really rage at you.
You rage now much more.
Well, that's because you should know better.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you don't even rage when I... Yeah, and you don't even rage when I ask legitimate questions. You rage when I ask questions that I could find my own answer to. Or...
I've heard that one.
Yeah.
Or when you're just... Like, when I'm beating something completely with a dead horse and you've already provided some kind of context
with
or whatever. beating...
when I'm answering the same question,
Yes, you're beating...
I'm beating you with a dead horse.
Oh, God. That is fucking... Please don't hit me with a dead horse. Oh, boy.
I think we should definitely try to do that at Hope.
Yeah, just carry around a horse carcass and just beat Jason with it for $1.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I feel like the CDC would have something to say about that.
Who cares?
Anyway, Jesus H.
So, mentoring is good.
I'm trying to think of a good example of you recently raging. Like, the Borg backup conversation and the SSH thing. When we were talking about running an alt SSH daemon on your backup location.
Yep.
But, to be fair, there was some misunderstanding there from my part.
No, there's no to be fair about this. I was very clear. We're not going to get into this on air fucking all over again.
It's the ducks thing all
but
over again.
But I was very clear about why I was running a separate daemon, a separate SSH daemon specifically for Borg. Anyways.
I hadn't thought of that.
But, you know, like, that was all like a personal mentorship, though. Now, the hot shit in Silicon Valley is to run professional mentorships.
Where,
like, the senior dev takes on the junior dev. Shit like that. And that's a totally different dynamic. I would hate that, honestly, because I can't, in that environment, it's obviously a professional environment, so I can't have, like, the typical Jathan root dynamic there, you know, where I can just, like, virtually slap him upside the head and be like, you fucking idiot, what are you doing? Why did you not read the documentation on this? Like, that is highly frowned upon in tech culture and in professional, you know, environments. Granted, it's for a good reason. I agree that, you know, you probably shouldn't condone that sort of congeniality, I guess we can call it. But, I don't know, it's a totally different monster, because without that sort of personal element to it, I don't know, it just feels different to me. It feels way more, it feels way too formal, and I feel like that kind of stifles things. I would encourage everyone to have one guru and one apprentice, or one master and one Padawan, if you will. Because there's always new stuff to learn, and there's always stuff to teach other people who are learning. So, and you know, when you teach something, you learn it better.
Yeah.
In the professional environment, though, I don't know if that's scalable.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, not everybody wants to be mentored. There are some people, there's a couple things to say along those lines. I mean, one, some people just learn better by doing completely on their own, and I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Some people learn through fucking hard knocks because they did something really stupid from a security standpoint and got compromised.
Like, yeah.
I've never done that. I've never been compromised. Primarily because if there's one thing...
I have.
I have not. If there's one thing that I still ask questions about...
Well, to your knowledge.
It's usually... Yeah, true. It's usually, like, security things. Like, even this whole email thing, I ran all my SSL settings by Brent before I really went live with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
I mean, you...
not everybody wants to be mentored. And number two is, I don't think you can just say, like, this person is your mentor. I think that it has to be the right person. And so, like, right now, I am trying to hire a student employee to work for me. And I had hired a student about 2 years ago. That student is now full-time, actually not doing anything related to what I do. But what I had really hoped for that relationship was somebody who really wanted to fucking learn things. And the reason for that is I think it pushes you, you know, like Brent said, to know more yourself. Like if someone's asking me questions and holding me accountable for teaching them these things, I need to know my shit. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So I was really hoping that I had hired a student that was going to just like sort of latch onto me and ask me fucking everything and want to do all the things.
A quick side note to illustrate that. In answering Jathan's questions, I have fixed no less than 3 bugs with my mail servers in the process. Because I was like, oh, holy shit. True. I didn't yeah. realize that PTR record was missing, for instance.
And one of them, yeah, I actually pointed out to you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it definitely, it's not entirely for altruistic reasons. You do benefit from mentoring as well as being the mentee.
I don't think it's mentee. I feel that like sounds it's too mentee. Much like Menzies.
What? No, I'm almost positive it's mentee. Anyways, continue. Sorry.
Anyways.
So the other thing is I'm looking for a student now. And again, I'm really hoping for that type of relationship with a student. I'm hoping for like a sophomore that's going to spend a good, you know, year and a half or 2 years with me before they graduate at a minimum. Mm-hmm. And who really wants to just learn shit, because I am definitely the kind of manager or boss who, you know, if somebody says, I want to learn how to do this, even if it's not directly relevant or going to advance, you know, my actual work, I'm not going to say no, as long as you're learning and doing something that's mostly relevant. Mm-hmm. Or I'll try to work it into a project somehow and at least make it seem relevant. But in general, I mean, just having another person around to do those types of things and start to teach about those types of things, I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely would agree with that. The challenges with that, you know, there's plenty, but they're like, most of them are just bullshit stuff. Like, you know, my mentor is telling me to do this thing, but I don't understand why. Or, you know, my Padawan is totally making some really stupid design decisions right now. And how do I convey that? You know, there's like the practical aspect of it,
yeah,
which is mostly just communication issues.
Sure. Well, and the other thing is, I actually don't usually think of myself as like a highly motivated person. This is a little bit of a tangent, but it sort of popped into my head and I've had some
scotch. You're lazy.
My tolerance is totally lazy. Yeah, but how much time did I spend just using Gentoo because I wanted to? Like, how much time?
I don't know.
How much time did I spend like tweaking Gentoo as best as I could, even though I never had to?
Yeah, but you were a ricer, and that kind of helped you land where you are now.
But I learned so much through that.
What's wrong with
ricing? That's true.
I didn't have to do any of that. But it was for some people. I don't find it to be that fun now. Despite, oh, okay. You know, getting paid for it.
Well, maybe that's why it's not fun anymore, because now you're paid to do it.
But I mean, I could still be using Gentoo and, you know, cracking my own skull open on a regular basis.
You could be.
You know what? That would probably solve my mail server issues, because I could change the use flag.
Cracking your skull open?
Yeah, because I could change the use flags that Clam is compiled with, and it wouldn't use so much fucking RAM.
Hey, you know,
that's true.
Clam AV has the demon Clam D.
I know.
You should fork it and call it Clam Jathan.
What is it gonna do?
Just every time you run it, every 5 seconds, it just emails you telling you to calm down.
Emails Jathan
to clam to now.
It emails Jathan to clam down. Yeah.
Yeah, like every person that runs it. Every instance it runs in.
If I send you an angry email, you know that your emails are successfully sent.
Oh my god, yes, we have to do this.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I've already forked every fucking project there is.
Yeah, yeah, your first answer is to just fork it, which is maybe not the best answer.
Like, I'm upset with a piece of open source software. Fuck it, I'm forking it. I need this to work my way.
I want to get some good tips in before we continue to the next topic here.
Yeah.
Because this is...
Yeah, I'm going to shut the fuck up.
It's important to get, like, I would say, like, communication is probably the biggest factor. And then second to that, but very close second, is you both have to have a passion for the subject matter. Like, I would have not put up with Jathan's shit, frankly speaking, for so long if I didn't have a passion about Linux and him using Linux and using it more.
I think he's in love with me.
No, I definitely am not in love with you, but...
I think you want him to be in love with you, but no.
I could talk him into it. Wait till Hope.
No.
We're going to take a picture.
I don't... What, just like Last Hope?
Well, you're going to be a little closer.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're going to do like a stop motion.
Yeah.
Throughout the years. But no, I would say, like, number one is communication. Number two, but, like, very close number two, is passion for the subject matter. And those two things, I think, make the biggest difference in mentorship. I wanted to talk more about professional mentorship, but I don't really have a lot of experience with that, so I can't talk as much about it. But I would
say, if you would like to come on the air and talk about professional mentorship, please email jthon@sysadministrative.com.
I actually have some comments about that.
Yes.
As far as professional mentorship is concerned, I mean, if you're hired as a junior, then being mentored is part of that. But at the same time, some companies are like, well, I'm not hiring you to learn. You should already be.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I think as long as you have a company that is familiar with the idea of on-the-job training, as it used to be called specifically, you know, I think that's okay. But when you get to a point where they're saying, he should already know this. No, you need to understand how long it takes for someone to get to speed, you know? Like, not everyone is, you know, freaking Einstein at computers and tech support and servers.
Well, I'd be careful with that, because there is, like, if you're hired on as the junior identity manager admin, you should probably fucking know how LDAP works. You know?
Sure,
like,
sure.
Like, there's, like, some core concepts, but I wouldn't expect them to, like, yeah, I wouldn't expect a junior versus a senior. I wouldn't expect the junior to know how to turn up a new open LDAP instance. As we talked about in last episode, open LDAP is very complex.
Ridiculously so.
And it requires a lot of work. Yeah.
So you should use free IPA.
Yes. That, not exactly where I was going. Like, use whatever's appropriate for your environment. Fine. You know, Stryker's a great guy, and I think free IPA is doing some great stuff. But use whatever's appropriate to your environment. Don't necessarily stick with one thing just because we had a guy on here for the show about it. The fuck was I going with that? Oh, right. But yeah, but I mean, that is a good point, Peyton, that, like, you know, you, even the senior guy is constantly learning, and he is the senior guy because he
very
self-motivated to learn.
I mean, I've got a senior guy at work that's, he's actually disconnected from what I was originally hired into and what he originally was overseeing. He's moved on, and he's still, like, with us, but as far as, like, reaching out to him about stuff like that, it's, I have to go to other people at this point now. But, you know, he's always taking a test. He's always, you know, certifying himself on new things. He's always playing with new technologies. And as far as, you know, providing that mentorship, it's always there, you know. So finding someone, like you said, who's passionate about the same things you are, who is wanting to show you, hey, these new things, let's learn these new things, that's what I think you need to have, you know. And then, of course, obviously, C-levels who aren't completely clueless and understand that people are going to learn by doing, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's not how everybody learns, but I would say that's probably how most people learn.
Sure.
And especially within our industry, that tends to be the average Joe, is someone who learns by doing rather than reading.
Yeah. And, you know, the honest truth is I don't need to run my own fucking email, but I want to put it on my resume and understand it better, so I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I also...
It's a good thing to have. It's a dying talent, but yet it's a core part of everything tech. You know, like, email's not going away as much as Slack would want it to. It's not going away.
Yeah.
So it's good to know how it works and to demonstrate that you have working knowledge of it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You guys want to move on?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, yeah, we're...
We can make the next one pretty quick.
For our listeners' note, we are an hour and 9 minutes into the Raw so far, so...
Well, you know...
What?
Fuck it.
Let's make it a three-hour episode.
No, we're not doing 3 hours. It'll at a guess, I want to say it'll be about an hour 30 in the Raw, which is probably about an hour 20, hour 15 in the release. So let's talk about Let's Encrypt, now offering wildcard certs and offering Acme version 2 service.
Yeah, so I was actually doing a little bit of reading about this. You can get the wildcard certs only by using their Acme version 2 service. But once you actually do that...
That makes sense.
Now, they do require you to modify your DNS text records, you know, so you can demonstrate you have control over that domain, which is, I mean, that's reasonable. I've done that a thousand times, you know. But, you know, one cert to control secure all of your subdomains, your domains and subdomains, I think that's fantastic. And we talked about this last season when they announced that it was going to come into play in 2018. You know, I think it's great. I'm looking forward to securing my websites with a wildcard cert.
I think they originally had planned for a February release. Maybe. Obviously, like, this was just announced, what, yesterday? So they did miss that.
Officially.
Yeah.
I think it was activated, though, sooner. Like, if you were in the know, you could actually have been using them for a couple weeks now.
Really?
Unsure.
I'd have to...
I'll try to find, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it for the show notes because it's a lot of research and it's a little payoff. Sure. But I would suspect if you search their API docs on the archive.org mirrors,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you could get the answer to that.
Well, I was going to say, I had bitched about their documentation in the past, but they redid a lot of it, and I was just reading through some last night, and I was more impressed anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I did see on Twitter that there are some people who were complaining about it not being working properly or not being completely stable right now. I'm sure that they are working through any kinks that they have. You know, I mean, it is a new service for them, so they can't be perfect every time. So I'd say be patient with it and, you know, do the best you can, you know.
I think that was probably the one main thing holding them back from wide-scale adoption. I would say now there's really no reason to not go with them unless you need an extended validation cert. But honestly, those things are kind of bullshit these days anyways.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sort of along the same lines in terms of, you know, making decisions and going with things or not, are you going to get a wildcard cert?
You know, I probably will for work. Because
so do you know,
yes.
Do you know if they support having different private keys across different servers at least?
That's a good question.
Because that is the only way I would probably get a wildcard cert. Because otherwise just having the same key and cert across my whole infra.
Well, and that's the other thing. Yeah, like that's the risk. And I did want to bring that up. So thank you for doing that. I would not do it. So we offer HTTPS proxies on our nodes. You know, for those not aware, obviously, like you heard me plug earlier, we're a VPN provider. We're also a proxy provider and, you know, a SOX provider. And we offer HTTPS proxy as well as just plain text HTTP. And obviously you need a cert for that. And it needs to be a validated cert these days because both Firefox and Chrome hate self-signed certs.
They really do.
So I leveraged Let's Encrypt to do that. However, I would not run wildcard certs for those nodes because they're spread over a much more wide network provider list. And they're a much more... I don't know. I just have a much worse... I have a bad feeling about doing that because that's too much to control. I like having node, one cert. And then,
well, and in your case, from a security standpoint, if one node got compromised...
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I don't want the entire... And granted, like, it's great that Let's Encrypt has a small renewal window, a small validity window.
Yeah. I do, as annoying as it is sometimes, it's still...
It makes sense. It makes sense, yeah.
It's not a 20-year well, license or whatever, you know.
Or even like a 1 year, which is the standard for...
Yeah, right.
You know, other, like, paid-for, trusted third-party...
Something I'm curious about, though, that I'm not 100% on is how much does a cert normally cost? Like, if you buy a year or 2 year or 3 year?
Depends on the CA, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so our first cert for the podcast, for example, was before Let's Encrypt was really a thing.
Mm-hmm.
We used Thought, right?
Thought SSL 123 cert. We got it through Namecheap.
And it was like...
So it's actually immensely cheaper to... It was, I should say. Namecheap no longer offers Thought certs.
Well, if I had access to PayPal, anyway, I could go back and tell you exactly how
I
much
could
it
tell
was.
You. It was about $25 a year.
Yeah, okay. So that being said, most wildcard certs start at around $100.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, a lot of people, as soon as they're like, oh, we have, you know, 5 or 6 subdomains, immediately they want to get a wildcard cert, which I think is fine, other than it's important to understand the security implications of doing
that. And wildcard certs are a lot more expensive. They're like $300 for a year.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. They were...
I'm going to look it up.
That's what I recall.
But the other thing is...
That's not Namecheap pricing, though. That's, like, direct from the CA price.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking up, like, Komodo right now just because that's who I use for work. Mm-hmm. Because I have to. But
oh, God. I'm so sorry for you.
Yeah, I've used Komodo certs in the past. I'm not a fan.
No, their basic wildcard cert is $42 a year.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's surprising. Really? Wow. I guess now they have to be more competitive because
Of Let's Encrypt, yeah.
Yeah.
And so some people would argue at this point that, you know, a purchase certificate from Komodo or Thought is still, it shows that you
that over there.
Have more validity or whatever, but
mm-hmm.
I don't personally feel that way because it's really about the implementation anyway.
And as we saw from sorry, that's the baddie. We haven't talked about that yet this episode.
Yeah, watch it.
As you'll see in our baddie, you know, a CA being trusted really doesn't mean shit if they, you know, like, there's a lot of CAs out there, and many of them have had issues at this point. So I don't really find that argument convincing.
Yeah, I don't either, personally, but the only other thing I was going to say is there are legitimate use cases where a wildcard is really handy, though.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like, if you're running high availability services and you actually need two nodes to have the same certificate and you're running HA proxy and stuff like that, wildcard serves can be wildly useful there.
So, but here's the problem with...
But you can still get away without them, by the way.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you just terminate SSL on the balancer itself. But here's the thing. You mentioned you wouldn't use wildcard certs unless you could use different keys. That's not how PKI works. Specifically, that's not how wildcard certs work. I don't know of a single wildcard implementation where you can do that. I don't even know how you would generate the CSR for that with multiple keys for one.
It is possible to do it such that if you are compromised, you're still not compromised across everything using that cert.
I
was reading an article earlier. I will find it.
The only way I can think of doing that is if you got like a wildcard cert from a bunch of different CAs. That's the only way I can think of doing that with multiple keys.
I'm fucking looking it up.
Okay. Well, you know, if you find it, I'll put it in the show notes.
I'm on the wrong laptop, but I will.
Okay. Well, just look for it later. Get me the link. I'll put it in the show notes if you find it, because I would be interested in seeing how one would do that, because it makes no fucking sense from a PKI standpoint.
Sure.
But that being said, I think we're ready for that last topic. Are you guys ready?
The last topic. Oh, God. This is going to turn into... Maybe... Should we...
No.
No, we're not saving any of them.
We are right, doing right. it. We already had to move the one topic over.
Okay.
All right. So, Jathan shared with me this article about an encrypted email provider end-to-end. You know, like totally end-to-end. Not just like using encryption for the tunnels kind of a thing. For the connections. Anyway, so there was a article written about how people were freaking out because this service, this encrypted email service, was blocked by Comcast. And then all of a sudden people are crying like, oh no, like, oh, I wish we had net neutrality still. And it's like, hey, you fuckers, we still have net neutrality. The only thing that was repealed, and this is, I hate sensationalism. I love net neutrality. Don't get me wrong. I'm all for it. I'm pissed that the regulations were removed recently, that they were repealed, but you need to take it with a grain of salt. You need to understand like hyperbolism and hyperbole, I should say, and like inaccuracy doesn't do shit to help our cause in this. And saying like, oh, net neutrality was repealed, no, it fucking wasn't. A very small part of it was, specifically as it relates to mobile carriers and streaming video delivery. That's what was repealed. That is like, it was like the one part of that. And that was only introduced in, what, 2016?
Yeah.
So, no, net neutrality hasn't been repealed. And I wish people would stop fucking saying that, because it's not accurate at all.
Okay, but here's the thing. I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
Yes.
All I'm saying, though, is it at least gets people fucking thinking about it and being upset. Even if not for all of the right reasons.
Sure.
Seems beneficial to me.
Well, no, because at that point you're starting to get into the discussion of like, well, okay, like, is it okay to make shit up then, or to overinflate the significance of something? Shit like that. And then from there, it's just a quick hop, skip, and a jump into like the discussion of, do the ends justify the means? And you got to be careful with that, because you still need integrity. Like, you can't, people have to be able to trust what you're saying and the claims you're making are true. We in the tech industry specifically fight this a lot. Security professionals in the tech industry have been arguing that the NSA was engaged in, you know, illegal spying of U.S. citizens for years.
Yeah.
Years before Snowden. And they all thought we were crackpots. Well, not we. I wasn't really a security researcher. But they all thought they were crackpots, even though they were right.
Yeah, I had a buddy who thought the Russians were spying on him through his webcam.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they were.
And then a couple years later, we found out, like...
I told him no, but then a couple years later, here comes the freaking NSA and their bullshit.
Yeah, and we find out that there's actually a lot of cases where, you know, people actually are... spying through webcams. And that's why, you know, everybody covers their webcams with paper and tape and stuff now. So, like, it's important that, like, there it's a crazy world. And you're going to make some claims that seem absolutely batshit insane.
Yeah.
But they need to be taken seriously because most of the time, people in our industry don't make them unless we have significant proof or indication that they're true. Making hyperbolized claims doesn't help that at all. That hurts it.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they are looking at it as like, oh, well, you were totally overblowing this one thing. Why am I going to trust everything that you're saying now? The problem's probably only a small fraction of that. Why should I give a shit? You know?
Yeah.
And that's why the ends can't justify the means. That's why you have to have integrity and full honesty and directness throughout the entire thing. You have to say, look, it is a problem, I think, but it's not as big of a problem as the media is making it out to be.
Yeah.
As teenagers on fucking Tumblr are making it out to be. As people on Facebook are, you know, like, you need to understand, like, yeah, it is a problem. This is exactly why it's a problem. That doesn't mean net neutrality is dead, you know? That's
dead
fucking
to me, you
clickbait.
Understand? It's dead to me.
Yeah. But, like, that's fucking clickbait.
Yeah.
You know? That's the entire problem with clickbait, is it hyperbolizes and it presents an inaccurate depiction of the actual thing it's trying to represent. Counterpoint?
I don't really have one.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I feel like, you know, the thing is, like you said, it's not explained to everyone, or it's not clear to everyone, that what was removed in December was protections put in place in 2016. So,
geez, was it December? I thought it was.
Yeah, it was December.
I thought it was later than that. Oh my gosh.
But a lot of people still don't understand what losing net neutrality means either. I've had discussions with people on the internet, and they're like, no, it's fine. I don't want the government controlling this or this and that. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, but you don't understand when it's one entity somewhere controlling your entire access. You know, it's not the power grid where, you know, you have a set amount of power that you get and that's it. You know, it's losing this is potentially a big deal. And I wish more people understood it. And I kind of understand the sky is falling antics, so to speak, sometimes, you know, because really, how are you going to get people to understand that this is and can be a big deal if you're not like, you know, hey, this is a big deal. But then what's that thing with the boy who cried wolf kind of thing, you know? So
Yeah, boy who cried wolf. So I don't think it's something they're intentionally doing. I think it's just rabid, like, viral sort of being overblown.
Sure.
So we actively have to combat that, too.
Yeah.
Because usually, like, I've gotten, because it's Facebook, so of course I did, I've gotten into, like, we'll call them discussions with people on Facebook about it. And like, they were clear supporters of net neutrality, but I'm like, look, like, I'm on your team, but you need to understand that's not what this means. And then once you explain to them, it's like, it's only like this particular bill is only for this content. It's only for this context, whatever. They're like, oh, I get it. And then it's like, you know, they're, desire for net neutrality, their support of it hasn't diminished any.
Yeah.
But they now can enter in the next conversation with an opponent being more educated on why it's necessary and specifically why that particular bill is detrimental towards the overall goal of net neutrality. So
yeah, right.
Fucking grape squasher.
I wish that people paid more attention, you know.
Yeah.
I just
Wait. Jathan, grape squasher?
Where'd that come from?
You're a fucking ball buster.
You're a fucking weapon.
I'm not even going to dignify that with
fucking
with
ball buster.
With any more
attention.
You're
a fucking weapon, dude.
Yeah, I think that's really all I had for that rant. I was lot more fired up about it yesterday. But, like, at this point...
Because you're angry.
Well, yeah, but, like, it's something I always get angry about. But now that I've gotten it out of my system, I'm like, all right. Now I only have to wait until the next time I see someone fucking making some egregiously overblown claim for me to get angry again,
Jesus
you know?
Christ.
I think I'm done with that topic, though. I just think it's very important that we make it very clear why it's important and make people know, like, overall what's at stake, but also, like, don't overblow what's at stake for the little things. So.
Yeah, that's definitely not a good idea.
Yeah. Jathan, are you ready for the baddie? Well, first off, of all the four topics, do either of you have any closing remarks? Because I don't.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
You're Gucci?
Gucci, Gucci, Gucci gang? Or Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, rather. Sorry. I'm not hip with it.
Damn, you're damn right, you're sorry.
All
right,
so Jathan, let's take the baddie then. Go ahead.
Jathan?
Take us into the baddie.
Right, we're going to do the baddie here. So we spent some time.
Don't do the Deloitte.
By the way, this is. I have to talk about this real quick.
Yeah.
There must be like some offices for Deloitte between Boulder and Denver because.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
When I'm swiping around on Tinder and the like, and I see people who work for Deloitte, I don't care. I don't care how hot she is. I'm like, nope, swipe left.
No, I feel like. Now that we've reported on it so much, we're more aware of its presence. Because I feel like I've seen absolutely. That too.
But I will still hold
and
it against
And they're definitely
people.
Not hiring more people, so...
Anyway.
Yes.
So the baddie. So we talked about SSL certificates. Basically, without reading through this whole article, you may have heard of a company before called Trustico, which is an SSL reseller. Primarily, I think they sold certs from Symantec. But, you know, their website did a good job boasting... Yeah, their website did a great job boasting how great they were and why using other certificate providers was a bad idea. So, you know, if you're someone who doesn't really know a lot about stuff, you might go to their website and be convinced, like, what? I should definitely buy a certificate from Trustico. Yes.
What were some of the reasons that we should trust Trustico over other cert providers?
They have these standards that all their SSL certs have to meet.
Of course.
You can read about it on archives of their website. Actually, let's see. Does their website work? It does. It does. Their website does work.
Right now?
So you're welcome to go look at it. Probably don't buy anything from them.
Yeah. Not a good idea.
Good news is their website uses cookies to make sure that you have the ultimate browsing experience, and they have a privacy policy.
So
here's the thing.
Their website, by the way, for quite some time stopped working.
Gonna get there. Shut the fuck up. This is my segment.
Okay.
You goddamn angry asshole.
It didn't have anything to do with the baddie, so I thought it was okay to mention.
It's not okay. It does have something to do with the baddie, so shut up. Okay. So here's the thing. Is at some point... I want to say it was their CEO. Is that correct? Because it's not in this article that we're using. It does say. The CEO.
Yeah.
Basically, somebody claimed that they compromised. Somebody compromised some of their...
Compromised or found a leak?
Unclear?
Proper
cause for...
Because I don't remember. I thought it was a leak, but I can't remember either.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, here's the thing. Is at some point, their CEO literally emailed the fucking private keys of 23,000 certificates... to DigiCert, and which, you know, that right there invalidates them. Yeah. But also, they shouldn't be holding on to the private keys beyond delivering them to the customer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So basically goes on to just say, like, hey, these people really shouldn't be running a CA in the first place because they obviously don't know how the fuck to do it the proper way. So what's...
You shouldn't really have any reason to give your key to your cert provider either. But
yeah, right. Exactly. You just give them a CSR and that's it.
Yeah.
Which is the whole point. Yeah. So here's the thing. Is Symantec's sort of their upstream provider. They will no longer be trusted by Google Chrome in the near future. So if you have Symantec certs and you weren't compromised, you're still fucked by way of this.
Those were being removed anyway prior to this. Symantec's.
Were they?
Yeah.
Somebody's was. But anyway, here's the other thing, though, is after this whole thing sort of came about, people started poking around on the Trustico website. I know I'm dragging this out now, but somebody...
Oh, okay, I see why it's relevant now.
Yeah, yep. So somebody discovered that they basically had some web app basically running that had a root shell behind it. And if you were... And if you executed certain curl commands within this shell... You could basically run any command on that box. So someone tweeted about this, and we'll provide some links to the tweets. And some of the threads that you can read through are pretty fucking funny. But needless to say, within somebody finding this out, within, I would say, 20 minutes, their website was just down.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't know who it was. What asshole ruined it for everyone by shutting it down, but...
Well, I don't know if that was something that Trustico did, or if it was something that... Someone just like curled it in that
power
form
off, yeah,
and did like an RMRF or something.
So, in any case, Trustico, you get like two baddies in one. One for being a fucking terrible CA. Like, if anybody still buys shit from you, I don't know why.
Terrible.
Number two, who the fuck does that to their website?
Yeah.
Seriously. Like, what kind of fucking idiot? So, you get double baddie for being really extra baddie bad.
You guys suck.
Yeah. Literally, I don't feel bad for any of you. That is fucking terrible.
What? Do you remember what forum that curl came in was entered into? Like, what it was
I'm pretty sure it was to retrieve a certificate or something.
Oh my gosh. So, literally, it should have just validated that it was a URL and not fucking executed it.
Oh yeah, so it was a box that says, please enter the fully qualified domain name, and then there's a button that says, retrieve SSL certificate.
It was just an FQDN field?
Yep.
What? Why was that parsing shellcode?
I don't know.
Fucking
I don't know, dude.
It's fucking that's amazing, terrible. Though.
That, yeah, I mean, that's
amazing.
It's just mind-blowing.
What's funny is their Twitter account is Mr. Trustico, and their description says, our products are highly trusted and ensure that sensitive data, such as credit card and personal information, is protected online.
No, it really isn't.
I don't think it does. No, I don't think it does.
And there was, like, this whole, like, spat between them and Symantec, too. And, like, it was all public, and it was glorious, because, like, they were trying really hard to be, like, you know, like, business nice. Like, Mean Girls nice, you know, where it's like, you really want them to fucking die, but, like, you can't say that because that would cost shareholder. So you have to, like, we believe that company, that some companies, you can't even name them, that some companies that we are in association with have a lower standard of business execution and shit like that. You know, you have to, like, word it in such a way that it, like... But, like Symantec and Trustico both were doing that about each other, like, nonstop, and it was so great. Yeah. So that is why I archived those websites, because, like, I didn't know, like, when Trustico went down, I didn't know if it would be back.
I'm surprised that there's something there.
I'm surprised that they're still around.
Yeah, I don't really know exactly.
How are you still a CA after that?
I don't think
that?
You can. Really, you know?
Well, I guess the thing is,
if you have certs through them that are not compromised, I mean, first of all, you should really make a plan to not have them anymore.
Yeah, right. So I actually, you know what? No, Payton is right. Symantec was being dropped before this, and we did talk about it, because I have had to reissue certs for Fox Proxy stuff. We weren't using Symantec directly. We were using Thought. We were still using Thought. And Thought is a subsidiary, I believe, of Symantec. All I know is that I had to reissue certs because of this. No, DigiCert, sorry. They're subsidiaries of DigiCert. So I had to reissue the certs for that under the new DigiCert infrastructure. So they wouldn't be invalidated in both Google Chrome and Firefox. It's both.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that it's been a mess. SSL is broken. Just use Let's Encrypt. Fuck everything. Technology is terrible. Computers are broken. And just that's the Minis Trivia. I'm Brett.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Pete.
See you around.
Smile.